Hey, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this is From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. This full episode has two parts. It has a conversation and a guided meditation. We're connecting you to various contemplative teachers, hearing their story, as well as sharing a meditative practice. If you don't have time right now to hear Lauren Billy's story, take a look at the show notes for when the meditation portion begins, and just feel free to skip ahead and come back later to our conversation. We've also learned with our early episodes that there's the challenge from moving between the passive participation of listening and that active work of sitting with a guided meditation. And we're really all about you getting a meditation practice going. So to help with this, we've developed pocket practices where you can actually download the shorter, easy to share part of the episode that's just purely a practice. You can look for that next week. Today's conversation is with Lauren Billy. She's founder of The Big Quiet, which is a mass meditation meetup, had thousands of folks in Madison Square Garden and other places. And now she's started Cycles and Sex, a movement to encourage and empower conversations around reproductive and sexual health. And this is a fascinating conversation at the intersection of how we are embodied and how that embodiment shows up in gender roles, how that shows up in leadership, and how a mindful awareness about all of that can really inform a deeper sense of participation in the world. Now, speaking of participating, you could be doing a million different things right now. You might be sharpening pencils or mixing paint, or maybe you're filing your taxes in the last minute. Whatever it is you're doing, take a second and take a couple deep breaths. Enjoy listening in. And hopefully you'll be able to sit and meditate with us in the second half. Hey, so we're here with Lauren Billy with Cycles and Sex, and I think we're going to have a fantastic conversation. Thanks for being with us, Lauren.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. Hi, Troy.
Hi there. So, man, you know, we first met at a conversation, a gathering around entrepreneurship and spiritual practices, or spiritual entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And I was really struck by just the way you approach your work. And so I thought maybe we'd leap into, like, how did you end up in the kind of the different entrepreneurial spaces that you're in, both as an activist and kind of a little bit of what you do?
Sure. Well, I'd say that I began a bit of a spiritual journey when I was 17. I was having a lot of problems before that, and I found recovery from some of my problems, and during that recovery, meditation was offered as a tool to basically just deal with life on life's terms. And so since I was 17, I've had meditation and prayer, and for me, prayer is just talking to the air in my room. Mm-hmm. But the idea that I was a part of something bigger than myself, and that I was contributing to it, and that I could use my perception to tailor the experience I was having here on Earth. Mm-hmm. So that began a long time ago. I'm 34 now. So on that journey, since I've been meditating and kind of seeking spiritual tools, I found myself, you know, as a young person who graduated in 2008 in the economic depression, really looking for ways to just bring in money around stuff I cared about. And I really at the time realized that I cared so deeply about injustice, particularly domestically, and studied that in college and did a lot of public policy work, which kind of lodged me into some activism stuff. But I was behind the scenes and wasn't quite sure exactly what my gifts were and what I was here to do, but was doing a lot of research for public policy, was pretty unhappy, but cared a lot about the message. Ended up getting a random job that wasn't what I was looking for at a fitness apparel brand. And it was an opportunity that came my way. I rationalized it in my head as it was Lululemon, and they have a really cool approach to business. At the time, I was so anti the man, if you will, that I would have never worked for a corporation. But they used yoga and the methodology behind yoga at the core of how they ran their business. And there was a lot of now as a business owner, I see how smart that was for many reasons. But there was a lot of empowerment and entrepreneurial spirit given to even the lowest job on the totem pole. So I took a role there because someone in my life also worked for them, and they seemed really happy. Yeah. So I began helping them build out their community and their brand, and I helped them build out some shops in Brooklyn. And then I went over to the men's team. While I was at the men's team, I was just Googling mindful entrepreneur. I thought we have to find people that are living this life outside of just sports. And while I did that, I found this guy on the internet named Jesse Israel, and he was building a meditation community in New York. I cold call, reach out to him, had a meeting with him. We felt like old friends, and I began to join his community because, as I mentioned, meditation was already a part of my life. So I was excited to find kind of a young, modern way to have that be a part of my life and my socializing. Meanwhile, it was also really good for Lululemon, the brand that I had. So we built a relationship, and I ended up volunteering for him to help him build his movement, and then came over about 2 years ago to join as a partner to continue to grow what we later called the Big Quiet.
I'm excited to get to some of the other stuff you do, but if this is the one chance we do through telling the story of the Big Quiet, just share a couple of the experiences of what it's like folks drawn together for this kind of large meditative practice.
Sure. The Big Quiet is a massive community of people who come together to connect. We sit together and lead people in opportunities to do kind of exercises and talking that allow you to drop some of the things that usually prevent you from being able to connect. So like icebreakers or topics that you talk about that you don't get to talk about in your daily life. And we also add meditation, guided meditation with sound and music and singing. So it's a bit like a non-religious kind of church, like Quaker atmosphere. But it definitely works for millennials, and it's grown tremendously. So I was a part of that until very recently. I stepped away to do the other things that I do now. So right after the election, a lot of people that I know who have been more engaged in politics and in activism would say like their November 9th project. Mm-hmm. And I'd say very much that after the election, I was, you know, devastated. And, for me, I was most devastated as a woman. I'm a white woman, so I want to say that. So a lot of the thing, though I care about all of the things that affect all marginalized communities, I was most affected first by just like the blatant sexual assault that our president says that he did and was caught doing, and that he was elected to such a powerful position after performing such cruelties on women. So. Meanwhile, because I'm progressive and I'm a millennial and I live in like a very progressive city, New York City, I personally feel so flabbergasted at how hard it is to talk about sex and to find information about my body and to be given tools and resources to love my body and feel good about myself. And, so some people that I actually met through the Big Quiet approached me. They're doulas, they help women give birth from kind of like the stomach up. So it's almost like an emotional support through birth. They said, you know, we've noticed in our work that women have no information about their bodies. It's totally crazy. And now that the election happened, like, we just want to bring it to them. Can you help us? So I joined in and we created something called Cycles and Sex, which is education about bodies through the lens of reproductive health and sex. And though we're women and we are doing this because we, as women, we realize how little is out there, we feel very deeply that this information is for everyone. And the only way to move forward would be that everyone cared and everyone had this information. So we threw a big event as a test last April in New York. Mm-hmm. And it blew out of the water. We had no idea. It was almost like we just put our heads down and worked really hard to bring together every company, every tool, every nonprofit, every expert in the field, which is pretty small comparatively. And 900 people came. We had a line around the block. We got all this national press. It was wild. I mean, the room was just packed. Like, the biggest complaint afterwards was that there wasn't enough room and you couldn't hear all the speakers. So we basically threw together an expo. We called it Cycles and Sex, and, you know, it was fully volunteer based. And we made a profit. So after that, it was clear to us that we had a responsibility to keep it alive.
Yeah.
And so we've been building that, and we had another one in LA. It was very successful. We have an incredibly engaged online community. And we're just launching our website. So it's a resource and a tool for people to find information about everything related to the body through that lens of reproductive health and sex. And the point of it, I think there's lots of work to do in our country to get people to a place where there's more equity and more equal disbursement of power. And because, because sex and reproductive health is actually responsible for the human race. It's actually the process in which the human race comes from. We think it's insane that it's so shameful and that it's so hidden.
Just to get a feel for this, like, folks should check out your Facebook page. I spent some time on it with my 14-year-old daughter, and we were just laughing. Like, there's this like jelly donut, and as the logo, there's this jelly donut, and out pours the jelly, and then there's this line that says, "This is for everybody who came from a uterus," which is pretty much everybody.
100% everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So this notion is that you get past the embarrassment and you get to this place of where, like, let's talk about our lives and our bodies. And this, there's kind of like this lightheartedness that just makes it more possible to have this conversation.
Yeah, thank you. And I would say our Facebook is probably our least, I'm excited. We're going to relaunch our website. But yeah, for anyone listening, if you use Instagram, it's at cyclesandsex.com. And it's incredible. And it's all run by volunteers. That's the other thing is, people are so moved by it. And I'm saying this honestly with humility. Like, we're serving it, but I mean, I'm proud of it, but I'm more surprised by the need. But if we put something on Instagram, like, "Hey, we're looking for writers," we'll get 150 people that day that say they'll write for us for free. It's just crazy. And then we'll say, "We need it by Monday. We need a blog post by Monday." And 52 of them will write a blog post by Monday. It's just like,
wow.
People are hungry. So now, you know, we have a new concept, and we're going to create a pop-up museum. Instead of events, we're going to create a museum, and that's coming in the next 6 months. So
So there's some really fun places for us to play here. One is, I want to jump back in to that that place you talk about with volunteers. As an entrepreneur and in this kind of social entrepreneur work, at The Hive, we struggle with this kind of exchange of value. The Hive's a nonprofit. I don't know if Cycles and Sex is, but you use the word, turn a profit. And I think that this is a really interesting question for a lot of social enterprises. What is the work of understanding our value as a business and understanding it from a place of like abundance, where we allow leaders and volunteers to play with the future of the brand? Would you just share a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah, cool. I'm really, again, I talked about power. I'm really dissatisfied with the severe disbursement of money and power in America. And I think that money should be shifted around to better, to companies that are adding to the world. So I feel strong. So we are not a nonprofit.
Yep.
And, we will have a nonprofit arm once we grow. But we're not a nonprofit. I really strongly believe that, that people who are doing work that makes our society better, not people who are making, food and cigarettes or, things that hurt people or things, or even, the industries are backwards. And as you all know.
So stick with that. Here's what I think is really powerful. I figured that's where you're going to go. In full disclosure, we were part of this weekend event with another 100 folks that do entrepreneurship, and the amount of laughs and conversations I had with Lauren are amazing, including the fact that the ability for you to post an Instagram story while we're laughing about this, the ambidexterity blows my mind. But the part that I think it would be worth really exploring is, why is it that we think that if a organization is designed to promote a social good, that it's supposed to be not profit? And then why is it, if we hear that something is for profit, do we think, why would we volunteer for that? Like, Tell me where you've what you've come up against to kind of keep challenging that. Tell me where what that's been like to forge that territory.
I think to answer your first question, why do we think that like social good organizations should be nonprofit? Is because that's how culture has shifted. I mean, it's really shifted that like, or that's how culture has been designed in America through capitalism. And I think that when you're greedy, money comes first. So I think that a capitalist system, and I don't want to make it too political, but like, I think a capitalist system only feeds kind of greed. So it's really difficult to put the people first, and the true wellness of the people. And sometimes that means they buy less.
Yeah.
And sometimes, so like, why would, you know, so I think it's just backwards. So I think I would say that and there's lots of organizations that have come that are paving the way, but I would say the millennial generation in general, which I'm a part of I'm at the beginning of it, are very much more about values based. And I think that you see a lot more businesses that are more interested in making it easier for things to be affordable and for things to be transparent and for severe differences in money to exist. So like economic gaps. So I think that we think that social good should only be nonprofit because basically capitalism tells us so. And I think that we're changing it because it's not fair. The bad guys, you know, the people who don't care about the well-being of all of Americans shouldn't have all the money and power. And I think time's up.
What I hear you talking about specifically is about capitalism. You know, it would be interesting for another conversation to ask how you define that. But for our purposes right now, you're describing this as like a participation in the business sector, like capitalism, with this notion that the bottom line isn't always financial, that you're creating, that you're not about creating a sense of scarcity so that people will purchase from you, but that there's a work exchange that doesn't begin with that sort of urgency. It's like you have this group that says, I buy in, and so I buy it. And it's not that you have to create this kind of counter campaign that says, no, you suck if you don't buy my product.
Absolutely. And we don't, and we're very young, you know, we don't have a lot, I'm not making my salary off of this yet. And, but we have made money and we've chose to invest it, in things that make our product better because our mission really is real. And maybe I'm idealistic and we should do this interview in 10 years again. But I mean, our mission truly is to provide this information so that we can help society progress forward so that people are more empowered, period. And I think that if you're more in your body and more empowered, you will show up. You know, there's a line from one of our podcasts that's like, the more that I can communicate in the bedroom, I can communicate in the boardroom. You know, it's all connected. So I would say that we have so many volunteers, yeah, because they care and they want to be a part of this and it makes them feel good. And we just also don't have money to pay them. We absolutely will pay people once we have enough money. In this museum, you know, the business model for this museum will make a lot of money and benefit brands that are part of it, because our society is going into this more progressive place, as you can see with even just in the past year and all the movements that have been trending. And I think as we go along, these are interesting questions that we'll come up against. I'm a huge fan of like transparent budget and having everyone know, you know, not having huge despairing differences between the CEO and a social media person on my team. So we'll see as we build our business how we navigate that. But I would say that I have a very kind of generous heart.
Yeah. So let's take a turn towards the body just a little bit. The variety of folks that we've interviewed here on the podcast will ask, how does your practice, your contemplative practice, actually inform your work? And so Joey, who's across the room here from me, the producer here, he also helps us hold our classes at the Hive and think through how to evaluate that. And one of the questions we have is, how has this course affected your contemplative practice? So, of course, you need kind of a baseline. And so we go, what's the baseline of a practice? And it's this combination of awareness and connection. So one of our core facilitators, we were talking about this, going, how do we describe this baseline of awareness and connection? And she says, awareness of what? It really has to do with kind of that my body is aware of what is happening within me, rather than my head being aware about something that doesn't take my body to understand. So what I hear you talking about is really body literacy, or maybe even like a body consciousness, the sense of like, what am I participating in the world? And from this place of the body, what does my body bring into the world, and what does my body participate in the world? So particularly with your work, when it comes to the woman's body, to the experience of a person embodied as a woman in this world, in this moment, just describe that contemplative turn, if you will.
100%. Well, I would say just from the ground up, my co-founders are doulas, which is essentially a healer. It's essentially they're holding sacred space for women while they're going through one of the most traumatic and evolutionary experiences of their life. Mm-hmm. And then I would say that I, as a practicer, I mean, I'd say I'm leading myself before I'm leading others and before I'm leading an organization. So, I'm very in tune with my body tells me things before my mind understands them. My pelvic area tells me things before I go to a doctor and they give me a prescription for something. Mm-hmm. So I think every month my cycle gives me signs that I need to do certain things to take care of myself, and that my body needs, more rest or more exercise or more potassium or sex. And so I would say contemplatively the body, I would say that part even comes first before your knowledge about your body. I'd say body is before the brain, or is before the consciousness. And more than anything, when you come to our events, so people say like, I don't understand why this feels so good. It just feels so good to be here. And I think that there's something in the air that because of the freedom and the lack of shame and the knowledge and the kind of like love and acceptance when we're exchanging this information for particularly women, or but a society that has been taught that this information should be off limits and is bad. And if you look at the history of if you look at the history of gender or the history of reproductive health, it's totally based on oppression. And so I think people just feel so free and so good. And when they're in that space, then they can receive more information from their bodies and from the people they're interacting with, which is also expressed in sex.
So tell me more. Let's take a turn here. Towards how this relates to shame. And here's kind of the setup. So much of my own work as a contemplative person, as a leader, is this human condition of narrating my experience. The there I go again. If I don't hustle at this, then it won't happen. So I start this kind of internal bargaining, which really triggers this more kind of primal question, this fear of what if I don't do this, or a fear of how is this being perceived? Which really then kind of lands, unfortunately, back at shame. Now, we could go a lot of different directions with shame, but I think in terms of shame being this story that I tell myself about a past experience that then keeps me from being present to this experience. It's like I'm preloaded to define this experience in terms of the last one, which always leaves me framing it on the losing end of the moment. So tell me more how y'all are addressing that sort of shame head on, or maybe that's not even the right word for it, but how would you describe how you're addressing this with your work?
Again, like back to leading self, I would say for me as a human and as the way I walk around as a woman and as a leader, I just talk about the things that normally I'm afraid of or ashamed of. I practice out loud so that I can be an example to others, particularly to women, how to move through the discomfort. And I would say that shame, I'm only aware of my shame because it does come up in my body first. So I would say it starts with how I show up as a person in the world and along with my co-founders. And then our most active interaction with our community is on Instagram, where we post 3 times a day. And you mentioned the donut and the kind of lightness that comes with our work. We try really hard to bring, levity to this information because it's fun and it's childlike and if you and it's interesting and at the base of everything that we are as humans. So I'd say our approach or our branding, even if you want to talk about business, our branding is very much shameless. And through like a confidence and an ease and a bit of a millennial voice, through our branding, we give this information a voice and a lens that it usually doesn't have. And I would say that we do it in a way, here's an example. There, you know, normally I would even personally never go into really a sex shop. I wouldn't see myself doing that. And I would feel like embarrassed. Before I started Cycles and Sex, I remember being like, every time my team would want to add another sex part to our first event, I would feel weird about it. And I was like, I think it should be in a separate room because not everyone really like wants to go to the sex stuff. No, everyone wants to learn about bondage. I just felt like shame. I felt ashamed. I felt like it made us not professional and it put us into this box of like, I was more interested in like the policy and the equality. And what I found was the sex room, because of the community that we created and the interconnectedness that we allowed by showing like sex is a part of policy. Sex is a part of money and power. Sex is a part of capitalism, especially if you look at, you know, the demographics of capitalism. Sex is a part of every single one of your lives. So if we give it to you instead of making it separate, but if we give it to you whole, we use the word interconnectedness. If we allow it to be a whole part of your wellness, then it loses that like niche feeling that society makes sex have. So what in LA we had, I was way more open to it. And we had this, Pleasure Chest, this company that sells sex toys, they managed sex education all day at our event. And it was wild. There were things like, and sorry if you have to cut this, but there were workshops on deep throat and spanking. And they were just filled. They were like filled, like standing room only, with kind of people that I would never see at a deep throat workshop. And it was because people felt free and safe and shameless. There wasn't shame attached to it because it was also a part of a space where you talked about, nonprofit Planned Parenthood was there and the ACLU was there and transgender rights were there and really cool products to balance the pH in your uterus were there, but also this was there. And, I was like brought to, I was so flabbergasted by how full those workshops were and what the people in them looked like.
Yeah, that's wild. It's cool how you see this as, to use your word, interconnectedness. It's like that your work integrates the different parts of life rather than kind of partitioning things and addressing life's questions in this smaller and smaller, sequentially smaller, intimate groups.
And I think that in all my work, and this probably ties into even why we're talking or why we ended up at that spiritual weekend together, but I think this is very, I think there's, if I'm going to call it feminine energy, but there's like bringing the heart into the head. Like, so lots of our society runs on the head. And I think that what we're missing is also integrating the heart and, or integrating like a feminine, more holistic energy where all parts can be a part of business. I mean, I'm not saying that, I think that what I'm finding as I create this business is that all parts of my life, yes, are a part of this work. And that the way that I build this company is way more, inclusive than when I worked for, you know, a corporation where, it just wasn't appropriate to talk about what you needed for your body.
So before we shift and have you guide us in a practice, tell me a little bit about how your own practice is part of staying afloat in this work. I mean, you're moving pretty fast. You're adapting, pivoting, setting goals, seeing this shift, delegating this to that. And in these places, there's this pressure that we can feel in our body, pressure that affects our performance. It affects how we show up and how we stay in the present. What does your practice look like in terms of just showing up and running a startup?
Totally. Well, it's imperfect. I'd say that, but I would say like my bigger practice would be that I always pause when agitated or doubtful and think about like what my body is telling me and what I need and what my truth is. And then I try to enter a conversation or a situation back from that place. So, you know, it's constantly, I feel like I've never had so many hard conversations in my life than this past year. Hmm. And it's because I'm speaking from my truth. And the amazing thing is when I show up and let go of fear and shame and ego and just show up and sit in the discomfort, which is like where meditation practice strengthens my ability to do so. But when I just sit there and tell the truth, there's not really anything to be afraid of. Hmm. So I would say that is like my kind of motto for way of life. And I even practiced it yesterday and will continue to today, because there's always things going on that are, especially as an entrepreneur, as someone who's trying to build new things and shift culture. I'm going to just, you know, I'm in uncomfortable situations a lot. And then more practically speaking, when I wake up, I say prayers to the air in my room. I do a meditation once a day that's 15 to 20 minutes. And it involves like matching my breath with my heart, and which I'll lead us in a minute. Mm. I have like writing exercises that I do when I'm super bothered by something, that allow me to kind of get out what I'm frustrated by, and then get to, again, to that other side of like, what's going on with me? Why am I so frustrated? And then how can I show up back from like my heart and love? How can I show up back into a place of love and abundance? And so those are all tools. And then I have people in my life, a support group or a tribe that also live this way, that are people that I can reach out to for support when I like can't get back, you know, when I feel too far off the path.
Yep. It's really good. Well, we're going to take a break in a second here, and then we'll come back and have you guide us in that practice. Do you want to set any of that up before we take a break?
Yeah, I would just say get comfortable and have an open mind and be ready to get into your body.
Sounds good. Well, Lauren Billy of Cycles and Sex and of so many more things. Thank you for this great conversation.
Thank you for your time.
You bet.
Thanks.
You bet. We'll be back in just a minute. Hey there, you've been listening to From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. I'm your host, Troy Bronsink, founder and director of The Hive, a center for contemplation, art, and action. We're a nonprofit located in the North Side neighborhood of Cincinnati. And our secret sauce is getting people together in daily practices using 6 to 8 week peer-to-peer groups in areas around arts, yoga, community, spirituality, and more. For those of you in the Cincinnati area, starting on April 5th is a class with a new yoga teacher of ours, Demeter Wright. And she'll be teaching the class Stand in Your Power, the yoga of personal power. Might have some interesting correlation to this week's episode. To learn more about The Hive, check out our website, www.cincyhive.org. Now let's get back to the practice with Lauren Billy. Well, we're back with Lauren Billy, and it's just been great talking with you.
You too. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to just step back now and let you you guide us into practice.
Okay, awesome. All right, if you're out there, get comfortable. I invite you to take off your shoes if you can. You can sit or lay any way that you feel comfortable. I invite you to close your eyes. And for the next 10 minutes, I'm going to guide you through a practice that allows you to get really into your body and into your breath, and then enjoy some moments of silence in that space. I'll guide you out at the end. And before we begin, I just welcome you to let go of any judgments that you have of the next few minutes or of yourself and your ability to meditate. And please join me in 3 breaths. We're going to take a big inhale now. Hold it at the top and release out your mouth. Let's do another. Take a big inhale through your nose. Hold it and release. And let's do one more. Inhale through your nose. Hold and release. Notice any tension that you have in your body. Any funny things your body's doing, are your fingers moving, is your leg tapping, are your toes curling? Just notice. And as you continue to breathe, let go of those tensions or those little movements and try and remain really still. Bring your attention to your feet. Are they on the ground? Can you feel what they're touching? Can you feel the weight of your body? Can you feel each pad on the base of your toe? Notice your ankles. They carry so much weight. Feel them. Now bring your attention up your calf, feel your shin. Notice your knees. Are they bent? Are they straight? Can you feel your tendons? Now bring your attention up your leg into your thighs, your quadriceps. Some of your biggest muscles in your body. Notice your hips. Again, see if there's a bend if you're sitting. If there is a bend, feel where both sides of the bend come together. Notice your butt. Feel the pressure on the other side of whatever it's touching. Appreciate it for how much it holds. Bring your attention back into your pelvic area and your stomach. So many important organs. See if you can notice them functioning. Feel your belly button. Remember that this was where you grew from when you were inside your mother. Now notice your back. Go all the way up your spine. Feel your shoulders. See if you can notice the socket from which your arms come out of your shoulders. And bring your attention down your triceps and your biceps toward your elbows. See if there's a bend. And down your forearms into your wrists. Feel your hands. If your hands are touching anything, even the air, notice how it feels against the pads of your hands. Scan each finger. Can you feel your fingernails on top of your fingers? Now bring your attention back up your arms, into your neck. This part of your body holds your head, all that thinking. Feel your jawline. Notice your teeth, where they're connected to your gums. Feel your tongue inside your mouth. Is it resting? Is it moving? Notice your cheeks, your eye sockets. Can you feel your eyes behind your eyelids? Can you feel your eyebrows on your face above your eyes? Feel your forehead. Now scan the top of your head. Scan the hairs on your head if you have them. Notice your ears. As you breathe, can you feel the connection between your ears and your nose and how it goes into your cheeks and your sinuses? Bring awareness to that connection. Now bring your attention back down your face, through your neck, into your chest. Can you notice your chest rising and falling as you breathe? Can you feel its connection to the breath as it comes in and out of your nose? You see that the movement is synchronized with your breath. Now bring your attention to your heart. Can you feel it beating? Besides its beating, can you notice if there's any feelings inside of it? And as you notice the heartbeat and the rise and fall of your chest, witness them both at the same time. And for the next couple minutes, I invite you to keep your eyes closed and pay close attention to your breath and your heart at the same time. If your mind wanders, that's totally cool. It's normal. Just gently guide it back to your breath and your heart. And I'll tell you in a couple minutes when it's time to come out. keeping your eyes closed. Start to bring your attention back into your whole body. Notice the room that you're in. Notice if there's any sounds or notice the temperature in the air. Feel free to wiggle your toes and readjust your position. And slowly and gently, in your own time, come back to the room, to the moment, and open your eyes.
Well, Lauren, Billy, thank you for this time and for guiding us in that. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Yep. You're easy to talk to and a lot of fun to practice with. So thanks for this time. We're going to put some more stuff in the show notes for folks to see more about what you're doing. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you all. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. I'm Troy Bronsink, and this has been From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. Today we've been talking with Lauren Billy. You can check out in the show notes for ways to connect with her work. You can be on a lookout for the Pocket Practice, a shorter version of the meditation, later this week. From the Hive is produced by Joey Taylor. Take a deep breath and enjoy the day.